Here we go, the John Curley Sherry Ellicker Show. And I gave him a big send-off on Friday, telling him how much I enjoyed him, how thought-provoking and provocative and loquacious. And that was it. And then, oh, he's back. It's like a, you know, like you get on a plane, you say goodbye to the person you had a good job, good time talking to. And then all of a sudden, you're standing next to you at the baggage claim. Oh. You're like,
oh, you got an Uber too?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
So it's like, here you are.
I'm back.
You're back.
Thanks for that word of the day, loquacious, by the way. I looked that one up.
That's a good one. Down again. All right. Joe's been hard at work. Let's start with this one right here. This is always amazing, this idea that we've talked about. Jason, what's Jason's last name?
Roth.
Yeah, he's the guy that had the guy in the house, and he's living in his van with the dog. He finally got the guy out of there. It's amazing how these laws are written so that it really goes to the benefit of the person that is robbing the landlord. In this case, there's a guy that's been in this place now since, what, 2-3 years or something like that? And the landlord is the guy that owns the house, just wants him out, and they've just been dealing with him. And he can't get any resolution at all. And a judge has now just issued basically a restraining order, because they've been going to the door, knocking the door, trying to get the guy, I guess, you know, harass him enough to get him out of there. And a judge says, no, we don't go anywhere near the property, your property, don't go anywhere near it, and let this squatter, which he is, sit in there as he has been sitting in there for days on end and now years piling up. The owner of the property says he's $80,000 in the hole. A little bit of here from Como, and then we'll jump in on
it. The sign says serial squatter lives here.
People need to take responsibility for their actions.
A large protest outside of Jaskaran Singh's home on 123rd Avenue Southeast in Bellevue is the culmination of almost a year in missed rent payments by the man who Como decided not to name, that is staying inside the home.
Why not name him?
I'm sure there's probably a legal reason or two, but that I'm not privy to.
Okay,
but
probably because you're calling him a squatter, and possibly that could be. Okay, all right.
And we don't know every single detail. I mean, there's still some assumptions at this point, but it's pretty clear to most people viewing from afar what's going on here.
All right, just checking
in. Ford said he's taken an $80,000 hit on this. The last time rent was paid was last May, and the eviction process has been anything but issue-free. Singh's attorney, Stephen Freeborn, spoke to us on the phone about the rally.
Is there a message you want to give to the community?
I was there, and I thanked them for all coming, because it was not just community rally, but there were people that came as far away as Tacoma, Olympia. And what I really appreciated was we had representatives from both the Democratic and Republican parties, which I was very surprised, but and I'm very happy to see, because this should not be a partisan issue.
The tenant who is in this house with his family moved in during the summer of 2022. Eventually, eviction proceedings were filed, but then the Housing Justice Project paid back rent in a three-month advance so the family could find somewhere else to move. But instead, the tenant didn't leave. An eviction is again underway, but the Housing Justice Project also got that delayed. It is a judicial system that Freeborn claims is hurting landlords and tenants.
These cases are supposed to be resolved within 30 days. And now that they're taking a year or more, landlords, including my own clients, they were willing, when they knew that they could get somebody out relatively quickly through the process, they were willing to take risks with these tenants. So what's happening is landlords are being very, very cautious about who they're renting to. And so the system is created is a form of discrimination.
Paul Rivera, Como News.
Thank you, Paul Rivera. 30 days is legally how much time you have. Once you file, you're supposed to be able to be in front of the court. There are 650-some cases behind. I don't think they're in any sort of rush to make rulings on this, and it just drags out. They see, generally, there's an idea for the people that are in government, especially here in Seattle and surrounding area, the landlord's the bad guy, the tenant's the good guy, the laws are written in the benefit of the tenant. Because let's really face it, if we were to scratch just a little bit more under the surface, housing really is a right.
Well, yeah, I think you touched on an important point there, which is getting at the zeitgeist or the spirit of the age, and that is every situation, especially contentious ones, are impacted by the power dynamics. And if there's one side is being seen as having the power, they must be inherently bad for,
right.
for whatever reason.
They got
reason.
The power. They're holding the power and taking it from somebody else.
Yeah, yes. exactly yeah. right. But this situation is getting absolutely insane. May 2023 was the last payment 11 months ago, and this person's been squatting for a lot longer than that. I have a bit of personal experience in this regard. I've been property managing for a few years.
Oh, I thought you were a squatter. I'm sorry.
No.
That
was my 20s. Come
okay.
on.
Okay.
But we had some tenants that we took a chance on, and the landlord knew it. And we thought, you know, but we want to do a nice thing here for our community, and we're going to go with it. So about a year and a half into this family renting the property, there started to be the excuses.
Yeah.
Had some back problem, kept me out of work. Okay, we'll give you some grace this time. Then another payment doesn't come. Then all of a sudden, the worst case scenario starts to form. And you think, oh, gosh, goodness gracious, how are we going to get these people out of this house? Because at this point, whether the excuses are legitimate or not, the payments just are not coming, right?
Mm-hmm.
Fortunately, in our case, what we had to do to get them out was we forgave, I think, 2 or 3 months' rent, paid for a moving truck and paid hundreds of dollars on a grocery card. And they finally were like, okay, we're out of here. And I thought, like, ultimately looking back at that, that was the best possible outcome of that.
Because right.
they could have turned into this squatter type situation. And this is, by the way, an incentive for people to be able to live rent free now for 12 months. The more we keep talking about these stories, they go, oh, okay, I can get the Housing Justice Project to step up, pay a few months rent.
Yeah.
That buys me 3-4 months. And then, wow, this case of this guy in Bellevue, he's been derelict for 11 months, and the law seems to be on his side. And this is all too common in this day and age where it seems like the legal system is working against the law abiding and in favor of those breaking the law.
Yeah, well, Joe quickly found, this is a story, we had this one the other day. This guy does an example, so we'll play it again for those of you. I know everybody listens to the show every single day, but if you missed this one, he's going to explain to you how to get a house for free in Portland. I'm sure it'll work in Seattle as well. So, squatters, listen up.
This is how I got a free house in Portland, Oregon, and how you can too. So the first thing...
Before he gets into it, let's remember, you are stealing. Whether you go into a store and you take something that doesn't of value, let's say it's valued at $2,000, or you go into a restaurant and you sit down and you order whatever you want to order, and then you stand up and walk out, you're stealing. You go into the store, you're stealing. You're living in someone's house and they're paying the rent and you're not. You are stealing. You ready? Okay. Here is how to get a house for free.
What I did was find a vacant house that somebody was trying to rent. I'm not going to pay them, but they don't know that. When the owner showed up, I politely explained that this was my house now, and they need to leave. So they call the police, and I show them my lease agreement and the utility bills, and they tell the owner that this is a civil matter, and they've got to sue me. This made the owner super angry, so she lawyers up and tries to evict me. Of course, I can't afford a lawyer, so I call up a tenant advocacy group who gives me a lawyer that's 100% free and funded by taxpayers. So my out-of-pocket is still $0. So this lawyer fights on my behalf for months and months, really driving the owner crazy and costing her tens of thousands of dollars. Finally, the owner decided it would be cheaper to just give me a chunk of cash to leave rather than continue paying the lawyer. So she writes me a check for $10,000 and I move out.
$10,000.
I didn't even have to clean the place up, and that's a good thing because I do a lot of drugs and the house looks every bit of it. Still no thank you note for aerating the walls, but whatever. So I just got 9 months of free rent in a house that otherwise would have cost me $3,000 a month, plus a nice cash for keys check. And I wasn't even charged with anything. I always thought that stealing was wrong, but it turns out if you steal a house, it's not even against the law here. So this couldn't have worked out any better. Thanks, Portland.
So this is an example, again, the people that write these laws and come up with these restrictions and everything else, they always assume the best. You and I have talked about this before. That human nature, they're the best. And they're like, well, no one would take advantage of these things. Why would anybody do that? Why would anybody do that? Because they're human beings. Yes. And there's an opportunity to take advantage of it if you can stay and eat for free. You go into Red Robin, you lie, and you say what your birthday is, and you lie about your birthday, and they bring you a piece of cake, and there's no repercussion.
You can do that?
I'm not telling you to do that. I'm just saying, and then they come over. Happy, happy birthday on this special day.
Not worth it.
Happy, happy birthday on this day.
Boom, boom, boom.
Because people will take advantage of things if they can't take it. And here's a perfect example. This guy is losing $80,000. And you want to think, like, how about a little bit of Texas justice? Texas justice would be six guys come in, kick the door in, grab that guy, and throw him out, and then get all of his stuff and throw it all out, and then take some gasoline and throw it on top of the pile and burn all of his crap. Because most people would be like, you know, if you're having a hard time, I understand. But when you continue to abuse the system over and over and over and over and over again, at a certain point, you just, you know what? I'm going to take the law into my own hands, and out you go.
Well, and that's what everybody who would text in and Jason Ross.
Oh, same thing.
There's
some
people
like,
volunteering. Like, I will go. Do, yeah, right. I'll do it. But these guys in the Bellevue case, this is probably as close as you can get without going over the line and having this protest in front of his house.
Yeah.
And what's the result? They get a protective order for the squatter.
Yeah, right. Something needs to be fixed because there's going to be more vigilante justice and at a higher rate trending in the area. And look, if men were angels, we wouldn't need government at all. But it's
Thomas
cases,
Jefferson.
Abraham Lincoln. James Madison.
Oh!
Take that in your pipe and smoke it. But no, there's going to have to be a change to the law.
How
here,
tall
clearly.
Was James Madison?
He was a short,
he
wee,
was a
he
short
was a wee little man.
Yes, yeah, he's under 5'4", I believe.
But anyway. He was an intellectual giant.
Giant.
But there has to be a change in the law. I mean, the bottom line.
And the closest thing to effective vigilante justice that doesn't seem to have backfired is the guy in California we talked about on Friday, who he calls himself the squatter hunter, and he's moving into people's houses and just making it awkward and uncomfortable.
Yeah.
So that's what they need.
Squat on the squatter.
Exactly.
Yeah, you can't do enough. You can't stand outside and make the guy's life miserable because other neighbors have to deal with the sound. But they said every Saturday you're invited to come down there. And, you know, squatter out or whatever, they make something rhyme, short and punchy. But for this poor guy, he's stuck there and paying $80,000. And for the alleged scumbag.
This isn't a big corporation or something.
It's a guy!
Exactly right.
And if it was a corporation, corporations are people.
Thank you, Romney. Yeah,
you're welcome. All right. Boy, are we annoying. All right. But we have time for this one real quick. Seattle, China District. Mm. The SID.
It's becoming more Trumpy.
The International District is becoming more Trumpy, according to Danny Westmead. It looks like that. And he's like, I wonder why. I'll tell you, you know the reason why.
Well, a lot of progressives keep speculating why minorities seem to be turning to the GOP. Biden won the black community by like 90%, but the most recent poll shows that he's only winning 76% of the black vote. So clearly there's a shift underway. And my analysis is that Democrats are completely missing the reason why here. Joe, I don't know if you have this audio, but I watched Real Time with Bill Maher on Friday night, which is must-see viewing, in my opinion. But he had a former Attorney General, Eric Holder, on the program, and Silicon Valley. Well, he's a representative of Silicon Valley, Ro Khanna, who's a Democrat. And he asked him the same question. Why are minorities turning to the Republican Party? Let's start with the answer by Ro Khanna there, Joe.
Biden, I think, is at 76%.
Oh, there it is.
The last election, blacks voted for him 90%. That's a 14-point loss. 41% say Trump's policies were more favorable to them personally. Only 18% say that to Biden. For Biden, what is your answer to that?
Well, we've got an issue. We've got to do better on the economy. I have a lot of respect for Eric Holder, but you know, when the polls aren't going well, people give you the standard points. Oh, the polls will get better in a few months. I'd rather that we focus on having a better economic message. We need to speak.
Okay, let's
to black
cut off
and
zoom
voters.
Down there.
It's a message.
He just said it's a messaging issue, and we got to do better on the economy. Wrong answer. Okay, so what did Eric Holder have to say?
What
same
did he
question.
Say?
We should not be too alarmed by these March polls. We've got to take them into consideration. But March is a fundamentally different month than October and November. And we'll see where these things turn out when we get to that part of the calendar year.
Yeah.
So he just deflected completely. Didn't even answer the reason. The reason is crime, John.
And the problem will be
obvious.
June, July, and August, that's when crime spike.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're living in the Central District and you're living over in the CD, if you're over there in the Chinatown, and I had a friend of mine who told me he's got a friend of his who's owns a store. She's Asian, and at 5 o'clock, she gets off the. Now we got a little more light. She goes home as quickly as she possibly can, and basically locks herself in her apartment for fear of being robbed.
Yeah,
So there's two issues. There's a number of them. But one, they hate affirmative action, and for good reason, because they get discriminated against, because they are, you're allowed to discriminate against an Asian. Asians hate affirmative action. You have Joe Biden's pushing all of that DEI crap and all that affirmative action, which is basically governmental racism. They hate that. Plus, they would like to be able to live a peaceful life. Asians make up about 5% of the U.S. population. They make up 1% of the prison population. And most of the time, crime is being perpetrated on them. So they want to be able to have their business, live their life, send their kid to college, not be discriminated against, and not be mugged. So they sit there and they go, well, of the two, you've got the hologram of Joe Biden, and then you have Donald Trump. And when Joe Biden talks about law and order, which he doesn't, he apologizes to an illegal immigrant for calling him an illegal immigrant. He apologizes to a suspected murderer because he doesn't want to hurt his feelings. I'm sure the guy that bashed in the head of that woman who was trying to run and on that fateful Saturday, I'm sure he didn't care much about feelings, as he apparently did some damage to her body that people don't even want to talk about in public. But let's apologize to him because Biden accidentally referred to him as an illegal alien.
Well, and so what's happening here in Seattle? The Chinatown International District gave a larger share of its votes to Donald Trump than any other Seattle neighborhood. Grouping together all the votes cast for candidates in both parties, Trump was winning 32% of all the votes cast in the CID, which is a huge uptick from last time.
Yeah.
Which is astounding, frankly. But again, progressives aren't going to win those votes back if they keep misdiagnosing why.
Oh, it's the polls.
They're fleeing.
Well, remember during the Democratic National Convention in 2020, when people were setting cities on fire, not once did they mention anything about the riots. They never touched on them. Every single speaker that got up there, nobody mentioned it. It's like you're sitting at home go, they burned my business down. And there's no mention. Because law and order, don't forget, those are bad words.
Right.
That leads to a bloodbath.
It used to be, yes, it's about the economy, stupid. I think in this day and age, it's public safety, stupid.
Yeah, you can only have you can only have an economy if you got safety first. Dr. Lee, Sherry Ellicker show, you coming along for the ride. More than just a ride, you're participating. You're like the person in the back seat telling you where to turn left, right. Backseat driver.
That's the term, yeah.
Yes. What are you crowding that guy for? Give him some room.
Hello.
Not okay, you, teeny, in the back seat. Muckleshoot Casino Resort text line. That's you in the back seat. 1-888-973-5476. Sherry back tomorrow. Rick Tomlin in today. This is a local story. Contractors go to the wrong address. This happens every once in a while. It's always fun. See somebody knock down the wrong.
Always fun. I guess it depends on your perspective.
Well, for the people that are
for
like,
you.
For the people, like, when the house gets knocked down,
what a pleasure.
They go to the wrong house. They demolish the house. Right. And then they're like, hey, Bob, it was 319, not 316. Like, oh.
It's okay. We only had 60 years of memory in there. It's fun.
So
good times.
This isn't as bad because you could replace this one, right? But Cairo 7.
This woman tells me that she saw a handful of people, guys, on the roof of this building right next to me, ripping the roof off and leaving debris on the ground like tarps. And take a look at this.
Uh-oh. Take a look at this. Mr. Tran, we appreciate you and your story, but we're doing radio over here. You just like kind of some descriptive words. Take a look at this giant pile.
Audible medium we're working with here.
Metal flashing.
Okay.
The property owner tells you that these people left more than $20,000 worth of damage. And now, she has to fix all of this.
Debris everywhere. Everywhere it was messy.
Mercy Jackson's apartment was surrounded with debris after she heard loud bangs above her Wednesday.
In the morning, there was a lot of noise.
When she went outside, she saw this. All the roofing torn off the building.
I saw 5 people on top and they were ripping off the roof and throwing everything on the floor.
You feel like dirty. It's yucky to see these people walking around.
Katie Stark, the property manager at Parkwood Apartments, says a contractor got the wrong address and began working on the roof. She tells you that people in the surveillance video may be responsible for this damage.
Obviously, they're going to come back or we're going to get a call saying, oh my gosh, we're so sorry. We're going to fix this. But then you quickly turn to, oh, they're not coming back.
Video captures this vehicle, Stark believes, is connected to this incident.
Right. It looked like it's very official, but the cars that they had were unmarked.
But the damage left behind left a costly mark. The manager now has to pay around $25,000 for another group's mistake.
You got to be honest. Just be honest.
Whoever did this, that was very wrong. And it will be so fair at least to communicate that you did it.
I have reached out to the Burlington Police Department to get more details, and I'm still waiting to hear back. Stark tells me that a vendor will begin fixing the roof beginning next Wednesday. In Burlington, I'm Louis Tran, Cairo 7 News.
Thank you, Louis. Well, it's one way to get business. Tear off the wrong roof.
You're right.
And come
need
back.
Somebody to fix that.
I'll replace the roof for you.
I've thought about this concept for some time, and that is...
Oh, have you?
Well, not tearing off the wrong roof, okay. But... human error at the job place, because it's inevitable, right?
Mm-hmm.
But certain industries, if you make a mistake, are a matter of life and death.
Yeah.
And some industries, it's like, oh, that was a 5-minute setback.
Yeah.
And I was thinking about maybe like the worst mistake I've ever made at my place of business. And I've been in radio ever since I graduated college. I think one time I forgot to press record on like a 10-minute interview. So the interview was lost. But it didn't cost us the corporation any money at the end of the day. It didn't cost any human life. Whereas my brother has flown F-18s in the military. You know, mm-hmm. One slip up there, life and death.
Right.
I have a father and a sister who have worked in the medical industry. I mean, you get that IV mixed up. I mean, mm-hmm. That could have deadly consequences for a patient. So I guess it's kind of a privilege to work in somewhere where if you make a mistake, it's not going to, you know, hurt things too much. But is there a correlation between people who do a certain line of work, whereas if you make a mistake, it could have terrible consequences? Do those people tend to get paid more? That's my question to you. Have you thought
because they're dealing with life and death situations.
Consequences mean right. more, like an airline pilot or something.
You ever had your knee operated on?
My finger.
Okay.
I had, what's that thing where you're, Dupuytren's disorder in my pinky, and they had to put me to sleep, rip it open, and straighten it out.
Okay. Did you have to sign it?
Sign in?
Sign the finger?
Oh, yeah. I signed some documentation, I'm sure.
So I had my knee operated on.
Uh-huh.
It's the same guy. I always brag about this all the time. Dr. K, he's the same guy that works on the Seahawks. I don't know if
heard
he's still
it,
the
move
guy.
On.
Well, I can't move on.
I haven't heard it.
Four more minutes. And you haven't heard this story.
Okay, go ahead.
He's the same guy who runs out whenever the Seahawks are on the ground. They've got an injury.
Mm. Yeah, of course.
Dr. K's out there. So he goes, all right, so it's we're going to operate. We're going to go in there. I got my little, you know, gown on. Then he goes, okay, so it's going to be right. Okay, we're going to right knee. And then he takes the magic marker and he puts his initials on there. He goes, now you put your initials on there. I put my initials. And then he checks again, and then he puts his initials underneath mine. So there's all this writing on this knee.
Okay.
Because you just want to make sure you get the right one.
Sure.
Because, you know, you get like somebody put the wrong one down. Check and check and recheck.
You read those
and check,
stories all the time.
Check and check and re- Or the horrible one is the guy wakes up and they took off the wrong leg.
Yeah, exactly.
Sure. We got good news and bad news. It's like, give me the good news first. Well, you're not going to have to worry about that other leg. Like, whatever affected the one leg, mm-hmm. The other leg now is pretty, you're not going to worry
good
about
to
that. Because we were concerned that the one leg was going to, you'd have the same problem with the other leg. You're not going to worry about that. Guy's like, oh, good. Now the bad news. We have to take the other leg. Both legs? Well, we took the wrong leg first, right? There's no way to get over it.
No.
Yeah, when the guy cuts off the wrong leg or whatever. So your pinky, be glad they got the right pinky there. But they could probably tell because it was all bent.
So
right?
Hold on, this happened to you?
Oh, no.
Oh,
we were avoiding it by me signing it. He signed it. I signed it. We had
just
all these
potential
signatures
yeah.
on there. So everybody's happy to make sure they get the right one done.
Yes.
Right? You don't take the wrong one out. I would assume that people, the greater the skill and the more likely a mistake. And then, you know, these roofers, I'm sure I wouldn't want them to be operating on my knee.
Okay. So
but it's
then,
not their fault. They went to the wrong place. It wasn't like they were trying
right.
to do this. Like, I got an idea, guys. Hey, on Thursday, let's all go to somebody's house and rip off the roof.
Let me put the same question to you that I answered, that I asked myself, which is, what is one of the worst mistakes you've ever made?
Well, I don't
want
to say it
and
because Andrew's
going to
play the button. He's going to hit the button.
Move on.
I want to hear when you screwed up. I hear about your successes all the time.
I burned down a van. I burned down a Ford Econoline
van.
That
happens to lots of people. You burned down a van.
I had a barbecue in the back. I was shooting a thing for Evening Magazine back in Lancaster, Pennsylvania. And I thought the coals were all gone. And when the thing tipped over, as I was driving it back to the station, WGAL-TV, I drove it in, it tipped over, and I was like, oh, boy. So I clean up all the stuff. I get all the ash out, and I pull the little Weber grill out. I put that off to the side. But I guess there was one coal or two coals that were still hot, and they fell down there between the seats. And I came back on Monday.
Oops.
Parked it on Friday. It was like a burned out shell of the van. Yeah. The tires had all burned and melted. Yeah, yeah. You know, it was really classic looking.
Like an IED.
Bomb had hit it. Yeah. And I remember they called me in. They're like, did you drive the van on Friday? Yeah. So do you remember like what? I go, oh, I drove it to they had that barbecue. And they're like, yeah, well, and I ran out the back and there it was.
Might be circumstantial, but.
And the funny thing was, it's like after that, they never like said anything. It never showed up on anything. It was just like, just went away. But I kept thinking, am I going to have to pay? Am I going to have to pay for this?
You had built up so much goodwill by that point.
No, I think they probably just figured,
insurance will take care of it.
I broke that door right there one day.
I remember that years ago.
It wasn't intentional.
You weren't throwing one of your ragers that you usually do?
Oh, my God. No, I was carrying a bunch of
stuff. Why didn't this audio work?
I was carrying a bunch of stuff, and I went to open the door, and Andrew, you weren't here for it, and I put my foot on I kind of mule kicked the door.
Bad glass.
If I would have done that, I would have been fired on the spot.
And I spilled coffee into this thing. Andrew remembers that day. I spilled coffee into this part of the
oh, yeah. You're responsible for the entire policy changing here on liquids and tables. Yeah,
but what did I do? Remember I did, Andrew? I tore my shirt off and I dove on top of it.
Yes, I remember that now. It wouldn't have been the first time somebody spilled something on those boards, though.
Man, I wish there was a video live stream in those days.
Oh, there is. And it was Laura's first day. She was filling in. She was sitting right where you were. And I spilled it on there. And I was like, oh, my gosh. And I jumped on top of it. And I took my shirt off. I had no shirt on. Like,
we have to post this.
Oh, I got to find it. Yeah. And then Andrew was like, because it hit this stuff that was going, it would stop the stuff. I would throw it to commercial breaks. It was the thing that was automatically throwing to commercial.
Start button over and over again. Oh, man.
No harm, no foul. Just let me near a roof somewhere in Bellevue. I'll be all right. Or wherever that was, Burlington. Oh, the ruby slippers Dorothy had on. These things have had quite the life. Crazy story. Will this set it up? The sound right here, do I need to do some fill-in?
If you want to set up the history of them. But
okay, so the people in the town didn't want the museum there. This guy breaks in, breaks the glass, takes the slippers, steals them, because he thinks they're real rubies on the slippers. Then when someone goes, those aren't real rubies, he's like, oh, okay. He didn't even know the pop cultural reference of the slippers. He had no idea. He had never seen Wizard of Oz. He knew nothing about it. Another guy gets the slippers from the other guy, and whether he sold them, he stole them from him. So then at that point, the other guy has the slippers. And then he and this woman have them, and the woman is going to turn the guy over to the police because he's got these slippers. And the guy's, oh, not so fast. I've got that video of you doing a couple of nasty, nasty things.
Yeah. That's my sound effect. Whenever it's something you can't say on the air.
And then so he was blackmailing her with the sex tape. And then finally.
Breaking right now, a second man has now been charged in connection with theft of the Wizard of Oz ruby slippers from a Minnesota museum. According to an indictment unsealed on Sunday, 76-year-old Jerry Hal Sliderman of Crystal made his first court appearance Friday and was charged with theft of major artwork and witness tampering. The indictment says that from August 2005 to July 2018, he received, concealed, and disposed of an object of cultural heritage, specifically an authentic pair of ruby slippers worn by Judy Garland in the 1939 movie The Wizard of Oz. The indictment also says Sliderman threatened to release a sex tape of a woman and, quote, take her down with him, end quote, if she didn't keep her mouth shut about the slippers. The slippers were stolen from the Judy Garland Museum in Grand Rapids nearly 20 years ago. They were recovered during an FBI sting operation in Minneapolis in 2018. 76-year-old Terry Martin admitted to carrying out the heist. He was sentenced in January to time served because of his poor health. Sliderman did not enter a plea Friday and was released on his own recognizance. His attorney says his client is not guilty. We'll continue to follow this breaking story and bring you updates on air and online.
There you go.
The saga of the Judy Garland slippers is becoming more interesting than the actual plotline to The Wizard of Oz itself. But still, sometimes life is stranger than fiction.
Wait a minute. You taking a shot at Wizard of Oz?
You know, I tried to watch it with my kiddos the other day, and they just were not having any of it. I said, hey, kids, look, it goes from black and white to color. Right. Isn't that incredible? What an achievement. It's just completely lost on them. The Yellow Brick Road looks fake.
It's not about that.
It's not about that. But then, to me, inevitably, seeing it this many years later, I couldn't help but notice, the new 4K digital transfer of that thing, it reveals too much. It wasn't meant to see in that crystal clear.
It's not about that.
Focus.
It's about the Tin Man already had a heart, and the Scarecrow had a brain.
Tell my kids.
The courage.
I agree. No,
I could answer any riddle.
That's not from the movie. That's the song you choose to go with from Wizard of Oz.
I'd do a fiddle if I only had a brain.
I would have gone with Somewhere Over the Rainbow.
Too high.
Too on the nose.
All right, let me test you on this one.
I'm ready.
What actor was originally cast to play the Tin Man, but the aluminum dust from the Tin Man costume caused him to fall violently ill and spent some time in the hospital?
So we're looking at what, 1930
before
something? Oh, was it a famous actor already?
No. He's famous after this.
Oh, okay. Let's go with,
if you can't guess, you want one more clue?
Jimmy Stewart.
He was shooting at, and up from the ground came a bubbling crude.
Was it Clampett or something?
Judd Clampett is the name of the character.
That one dude.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, will we accept that one dude? Nice. Yes, we will.
I can picture him.
His name is Buddy Epson. Buddy Epson originally cast as the Scarecrow, but then they switched him over to the Tin Man, and they put aluminum dust all over his face, and then he got really sick from it.
He played the grandpa on Stone Fox. Now I know who you're talking about. Okay, good old Clampett.
Maybe mentioning random stuff, just showing up with random crap.
Well, you come up with an obscure reference, I have to match it. Nobody knows what you're talking about, so then I gotta.
I'm sorry, maybe because I interviewed him once for his book.
There it is.
Okay.
There's
the rub.
Heard it, move on. Yeah, exactly. By the way, if we had a heard it, move on, the show would be 5 minutes long, okay?
We don't move on.
I'll tell you a story about my brother who went to a St. Patty's Day party yesterday, and his wife said, why were you so quiet? You were so quiet. You didn't engage in storytelling. You didn't seem to enjoy yourself. He said, yeah, because, and I'll tell you why. That's a tease.
Oh, that's a tease.
Don't. Okay.